That's it.
Steve Smigel, we welcome you as a candidate for region. Have a chair, and if you have a 3 to 5 minute opening statement.
Oh, we all heard it. Thank you, James. I'm not good at chairs, and I'm not good at microphones, and I'm not good at keeping something between me and the people that I would like to correspond with. So if you don't mind, Jane, I'll get out here where I can actually spit up on you, because it's very honestly, I was at a group. I got to do a lot of speaking while Speaker of the House. This is not part of my 5 minutes, by the way. So I'm going over to the Kelly Inn.
I wonder if we don't have to have that microphone. You'll pick it up.
Going over to the Kelly Inn to speak to a lot of groups where many of you, mayors, for instance, have had meetings over.
Oh, yes.
And so I'm going over and speaking to this group called the AARP. And I'm going over, and it was a very, three rooms together, very, very long. And I'm speaking up in front and not using a microphone. And all of a sudden, the lady in the back starts waving her hand, Pat. And she says, Mr. Speaker, she says, Mr. Speaker, I can't hear you. The guy right next to me, sitting so close that I'm spitting at him, says, I can hear him. I'll switch places with you. Don't put me in my proper spot. Thank you to each of you for this opportunity. And also for the service that you're doing to the University of Minnesota. I understand the volunteerism of the Region Selection Candidate Advisory Committee, the time that's involved. It takes a significant amount of commitment on your part, and thank you. Thank you for doing that. I'm assuming that we're all here because we're concerned about the best interest of Minnesota. We are here to serve the best interest of Minnesota. And I think we can make the claim that if we serve the best interests of the University of Minnesota, we are probably serving the best interests of Minnesota. The university being that important to the state as a whole. There was once an author by the name of Robert Fulgen. And Robert Fulgen wrote a book that all of you have heard, most of you have read. You might not remember Fulgen, but you remember the book, All You Really Ever Needed to Know in Life, you learned in kindergarten. It's a good short book. If you haven't read it, get a hold of it. But Mr. Fulgen, and I'll cut to the chase real quick because I only have 3 or 4 minutes. When you read his book, he gets down to one word at the end of his book. And the one word that he focuses on is balance. The word balance. As I get a little older in life, now 59 years old, I believe that balance is even ever more important. I believe that you need to live your life in balance in your community, in your family, in your job, and yes, in your governing. You have to govern and get balance. Episodes and results are actions of this last week in this country shows that we cannot be extremes. You can't govern from the extremes. You can't govern from the radical ends. And I've tried to govern and live my life in balance. And it's that balance that I'm going to tell you about in the next 2 or 3 minutes. And it's a hard thing to do because you say the word I a lot. And I feel bad about saying the word I. But just to give you a little perspective of the balance that I hope to bring to you, maybe to the university, maybe to the state of Minnesota. Let's start with that balance being first, the balance of boards. And understanding the appropriate relationship of various boards. And boards have different types. Boards have very different functions. Some boards more involved, some boards more advisory, some boards more policy setting, some boards more active. I've had an opportunity to serve on a number of boards over the past years. Boards ranging from the Red Cross, the American Red Cross. These, by the way, are mostly volunteer boards. You know, the volunteer boards where you get to go to a meeting a month, bringing bars every other month, and buy $50 of raffle tickets, you know, in November or whatever. Boards concerning the development of the disabled, River View Manor, group home in my local community of Warrenville. Historical Society boards, Goodhue County Historical Society boards, the Salvation Army board, Croc Center board, and I was speaking over here with Rebecca, who's from Duluth, where we tried 6 years ago. By the way, this was a board I happened to be the chair of, so I was a little bit more of a spokesperson than the advisory capacity of being a board member. But we tried to locate a Croc Center, its own Croc Center in the city of Duluth. We chose Duluth because some things did not work out in the end. But various boards, including, I've had an opportunity to serve on a couple of private boards. A board in Utah, Target Bank board. Boards, I think, do have different flavors, but it's important for us to understand, to recognize and appreciate what the University of Minnesota board is. The policy setting board, the advisory board, but not the management. We have a new president, a wonderful new president from everything I've understood. I have not had an opportunity to meet the individual. We have a great team over there to do the management. Our board is to be that of an advisory capacity. Second of all, the balance includes, as you probably all well know, the legislature. I had an opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, a blessing to serve the citizens of Minnesota in the public life for quite a period of time. In the legislature for 29 years, serving as speaker for 8, having served as commissioner of 2 different agencies the last 4 years, labor and industry and management and budget, MMB. I hope that experience has added to the balance of my decision making, of my management skills. I think you can argue that the legislature itself, the House of Representatives, you can argue everything from the standpoint that we managed 201 legislators to 180 staff people. To, if you want to get really bold, you could say 35,000 state employees. And if you wanted to get really bold, Paul, you could say 5.2 million Minnesotans. You know, if you wanted to get really bold.
How about some dollars?
And about $35 billion of spending.
You could say that.
That you need to make decisions for in regards to the priorities. I think that experience of being involved in the legislature and in a leadership capacity, both at in the executive branch as well as in the legislative branch, bring a pretty unique experience and background forward. Thirdly, the U itself. I really like the University of Minnesota. I'm not a U graduate, Margaret, as you are. I'm not a U graduate. I'm an Oldie. And I'm very proud of being an Oldie, by the way. Very proud of that. But I really like our university. I don't say love because our university is one that I think is in need of some change, maybe needed some reforms. If we're going to meet some of the challenges that are before us right now in a very unique situation in this country. All public universities, by the way. It's not just Minnesota. It's Georgia. It's Arizona. It's California are facing the same difficulties that we are facing as well at the University of Minnesota. At the U, my wife was a graduate there, so I spent a few weekends there. My daughter graduated from the University of Minnesota, and probably most of you don't know this, but I am a professor, an adjunct professor at the university. I teach at the Humphrey School, and I have my class starting next Thursday at this time. I teach a class at the Humphrey called Governing Minnesota Style, and really, really enjoy it. And enjoy being an adjunct professor. I have been accepted as a fellow at the university, but have not served in that capacity as of yet. It's important to recognize that our university is both a flagship university for research, as well as being a land-grant institution. It's both. Needs to serve both. And I hope to have that particular unique perspective offering to you of being an actual farmer, involved in agriculture, involved in agricultural boards, involved in production agriculture, to bring to the table. I'm a family farmer of beef, corn, soybeans with my two brothers, about 50 miles south of here, a small town of Kenyon, and I have the perspective and the love of the land that needs to be there. I believe in a land granted university. And also I'm going to add something that many of you probably would not also know or recognize about me. I try to live my faith. I try to live the things I believe. And while words can be used in relationship to what the U needs to do to outreach and to bring diversity forward, I think it's more important to live those words. And I would ask you, if you would be interested, to walk across the street here, walk across Rice Street, to Reverend Bob Battle's church, the Berean Church, just across, Jim, you know where it is, right across the road here, where I would volunteer my time on Tuesday evenings to go over and tutor children who were having difficulties, children from disadvantaged families, mostly minority children. I would go across there, and Reverend Battle will tell you on Tuesday evenings at 6 o'clock and tutor when many of my colleagues were appropriately going out and finding a bite to eat and a bite to drink. I would go tutor. I would ask you to talk to Lucky Rosenboom at the Humphrey Job Corps Center up on Snelling Avenue, where not only would I go speak to their classes, but I would bring legislators to play basketball against their basketball team, and not just once. I ask you to talk to Reverend Michael Williams, North Minneapolis, who runs a program called Attitude Determines Altitude, ADA, Attitude Determines Altitude. Now, unfortunately, I just had to read, I was on Mike Williams's or Pastor Mike's board, but I just resigned from that board, to be very, very honest. I need to tell you that. Kind of unemployed right now at this point, as of a week ago Monday, and my need to come to the cities is not as often as a rate as it was previously. So some of my commitments to various groups or various boards in the cities I pulled back from a little bit at this time, just because my farm's down in Kenyon, and I don't need to be in the cities each and every day, as I've had to be in the past. And outreaching, living what you believe in, not just using the words, but living what you believe in. I would guess that most of you probably understand and know that I've done a significant amount of outreach in the past years, trying to recruit minorities, underserved classes, underserved populations, women, to run for the legislature. Serving and running is an important thing. You need to get people involved. I would not only recruit people to run for the legislature, and I was kind of known to recruit women to run for the legislature, but also support them. There were times in recruiting women that I would leave the House floor one day at 2:30 in the afternoon, wrap the gavel, head up to your direction. Actually, it was Thief River Falls and up in Roseau. Have supper with Maxine Tennis at 9:30 at night, and talk until 11:30, 12 o'clock, and drive back to wrap the gavel the next morning. It's very, very important that you live what you speak. You live it and not just use the words. Bottom line, I hope to offer you and to the citizens of this fine state and this fine institution a balance. I'm no better than anybody else. I'm no less sinful. I'm no nobler than anybody else. But I would challenge anybody else to bring the mix of balance to a regent position that, that probably my experiences and developments have given me the opportunity to have. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, thank you.
Okay. Okay, Paul Thatcher, then Harriet.
Mr. Speaker, if we could cut to the chase, as you say. I think we're very fortunate in Minnesota this year that time, opportunity, vacancies, and so on in the Board of Regents can play to create the possibility of your candidacy. Additionally, political changes in Minnesota also support that possibility. I want to thank you for applying. We're lucky that you did. I hope you're successful. And I would like to say that I've had the opportunity to know you and to work with you across party lines, often not on the same page, but I always found you a man of integrity, a man of vision, and honorable in all matters. I would like you to comment, if you would, on the circumstances that we face and the role that you could play on the Board of Regents as we see the legislature and the executive struggling with a deficit of maybe less than $6 billion, we hope, and the effect that that will have on the university, and how, without being a freelancer, you could engage on behalf of the university and speak on behalf of the university and try to protect the interests of the university in the legislative and appropriating process.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for those nice comments. Your question was involves many, many different things I think that I could respond to. Let me start with this. And to Mr. Thatcher and to others. If I'm here or you're here to make the Board of Regents of the university a retirement home for legislators, you and I are doing the wrong thing. Absolutely wrong. That is not why I'm here. That's not why you should even consider moving my candidacy forward. Not even consider it. If, on the other hand, we look at the unique situation of the crossroads situation, I think, that we're in regards to the funding of the university, the reform at the university, the support that the university needs, the public trust that it is. I've been involved in the public trust for probably the better part of 33 years and hope to have had built some respect across aisles in bringing forward that public trust, Republican, obviously, and Democratic as well. The crossroads we're at in Minnesota is probably no different than in any other state. A couple states have oil and coal, so in North Dakota, not quite the same difficulty that we have here. But other than a couple of three states that have some energy, we're all in states in somewhat the same situation. While I would say it would be wrong for you to consider me as a regent, only because I've been Speaker of the House and have some contacts within the legislature, Paul, I think it would also be wrong for not you to consider that as part of the mix. A maverick, I am not. I understand the board. I understand that that you have to be empowered, that you have to work with each other, that you do not go out and have news conferences by yourself, that you do not go out and unilaterally set an agenda for the university that is not set by the board and supported by the administration, supported by the management. But maybe to not use those contacts in some type of a way that is coordinated by the university would also be wrong. You know, when we get 20, 25% of our funding at the U from from the state of Minnesota, from the citizens. You might want to best utilize that the best you can in a coordinated a fashion. And I think that that would be an appropriate thing to do. I also think, Paul, it might be wrong to not utilize people and their strengths the best they can. In my experience here, and it's been over some 30 years, I've been lobbied by lots of persons wanting to become regents at the University of Minnesota. It's not a pretty process sometimes, folks, by the way. It's a little ugly once in a while. It's also very gratifying at times. But I've been lobbied by individuals before wanting to become regents. But other than social settings, where I have a number of friends who are on the boards, other than social settings, probably not utilized as well after they become regents. So, you know, you want to, from the youth standpoint, you want to utilize people's abilities, strengths, experiences, capabilities, you know, to, in a coordinated way, the best possible. Best is the thing that you can do. So, Paul, I don't know if I answered your question directly, but I don't want to be a maverick. Don't elect me just because I'm a speaker. On the other hand, if I am there, and the 12 other board members and the university thinks that there's a coordinated way to come here and make our case better, our case of reform, our case of performance, whatever it may be, our case of funding, it would be wrong not to use it.
Indeed.
Okay. Just want Harriet first.
One just quick question. You alluded to in your opening remarks, you see opportunity for reform and challenges that you could help influence change in. Can you talk in a little more specific terms about what some of those might be?
Well, I would try here. You know what? I think it is wrong for us at DU or for a city mayor, or for anybody else to just say, if we get a 3% funding increase from the state of Minnesota a year, we're doing good. And if we get a 3% funding decrease, we had a bad year. There has to be more to it than that. There has to be more to it than just saying, well, we got 3% more, or we got 3% less, and we measure ourselves by that. Very frankly, I think that this trust between the citizens of the state and the university can be exploited. I think it can be brought forward. I think it can be strengthened. I believe that that from the U, and this would be part of a think tank, this would be part of what a board should do, by the way, I think the Board of Regents should do. You know, I think that we should come to the legislature at some time and say, if we perform X, X, Y, and Z, will you give us more money? Or if we're willing to meet various standards. By the way, our economic development engine of this state, I think you can argue, might be the university. I think you can make the argument that that's the economic development engine. And, you know, after some thought, performance is important. Not just $600,000, or $600 million, excuse me, is what we get per year, approximately, not $600 million, but let's make it $700 million. If you graduate and people successfully pass so many degrees, or if you graduate so many students in 4 years as opposed to 8-year program, or if you graduate increase the number of low-income students that are able to graduate, put some performance standards, some performance measures there in reform that would be necessary for us to obtain those funds. One idea here.
Thank you.
I'm very performance oriented. I happen to be an individual who's very performance oriented.
Harriet took my question, so I'm going to segue to a different question. It will sound light, but it's not light. It's very fundamental. Microphones and being seated for long periods of time are a part of the Board of Regents. I've watched it for 25 years. And that's the way the business gets done. How will you, as a natural charismatic leader, be able to be a part of the group of 12?
Well, I've had part of my training, Margaret, part of my training over the years has been to listen and to learn and to not just use the microphone. Your microphone is important at times. You need to be passionate about what you feel like. You need to be able to express that. A part of being a group means that you, and this is any team, this would be a board of regents group, a board or a basketball team. You understand that there's differences of abilities, of talents. You bring different things to the table. You try to incorporate everybody. But then you hope and work for each other's success. And that hope and work for each other's success sometimes, most of the time, has got to be done in a unity type of a situation where you speak as a voice. There might be disagreements. There might be diverse opinions. But then you need to come forward with a unified voice. And patience, Margaret, my wife says I'm not as patient as I should be. My children say I'm not as patient as I should be. But I've been here long enough to know that occasionally I have to listen to a few governors and a few commissioners and a few persons who have good ideas from the other side as well. And I would like to tell you that I would have the patience to be able to take that microphone and turn it away from me. Just towards me.
Jennifer.
Steve, I think you're familiar. I was just watching the other day the presentation you gave where Tom Stinson was showing the state kind of where the demographic shifts are going and quite a concern there in terms of it becoming more of an aging population and the issues there with finances. But from the Department of Education and other educational leadership, we know that that also means there's more students of color who are in our public schools. What do you see your role in terms of ensuring that as a regent, the university actually meets its race equity goals that it set forth? Actually, it's a document that is currently being followed called Reimagining the University, led by the past president. So what do you see your role as regent in ensuring that those goals are met?
Jennifer, goals are important. You need to outreach. You need to educate. You need to encourage. You need to inform groups to be able to meet those goals. I'm not a politically correct person. I will stand here right before you proudly and tell you that. I'm not a believer in political correctness. I'm a believer in a lot of things, mostly the American dream, the American adventure that Mr. Jefferson talked about. And that's an adventure that talks about equality of opportunity. And the equality of opportunity means reaching out, giving the chances, giving the education, giving the scholarships, giving the dollars to people to be able to obtain those goals. I'm not a quota person. I'm not. I'll tell you very honestly and very upfront. I don't think this country was built upon quota standards. You don't raise one by lowering another. This American dream that you and I live was built upon opportunities. And I will, Jennifer, do everything I can to outreach, to speak to. I'm going to venture to say, when you said minority populations, I'm going to venture to say that there is probably very few that have spoken, encouraged, and enhanced minority groups in the state, well, at least not the last 3 years, but when I was Speaker of the House more than I did. I reached out to every group that was possible. Now, very honestly, Jennifer, I was probably reaching out to them to find candidates to run for office, you know, very honestly. I'm going to be upfront about that. I feel strongly about opportunities. Government itself, government cannot guarantee equality of result. It can guarantee equality of opportunity.
Adele Brady.
I think being a referee would help you as well.
Here.
right or wrong?
You ran me out of Rochester a couple times.
Well, What school was that? Never mind. Right or wrong, the success of a college's athletics programs may influence the stature and quality perceived by the public, as well as directly influencing financial contributions to whether it's the athletic program or the foundation. How involved, without micromanaging, do you think the regents should be involved in the athletic department?
It's a reality. It's a reality.
You know, we all want to make sure that our School of Medicine, that our School of Journalism, that the School of Public Affairs are the most important cornerstones with other schools in at the university. But we do need to face reality, too. Perception becomes reality. And if you look at schools around the country, and I have not researched this, so I'm making a judgment without doing the research. I'm making a judgment. But I'll bet you, I would almost bet my farm that the judgment is true, that the dollars given to a university from alumni, from interested groups, that there's a correlation to that and the performance of their football team or their basketball team. It brings an enthusiasm. It brings alumni together for a reason. It's a focal point. Mayor, Saturday afternoon in Minnesota, and you've got that nice sunny day, that new TCF Bank Stadium should be packed. And it should be packed with the result that when people leave there, they feel good about the U. And if they feel good about the football team, believe me, they're going to feel better about opening up this here and writing a check. I guarantee you. I'm sure that's true at Penn State. I'm sure that's true at Ohio State. I know it's true at Wisconsin. And it's part of life. It's a reality. I will also tell you that I was speaking to that, Mayor, as you probably know, in 2006 when the stadium issue did pass for TCF Bank Stadium as well as for the Twin Stadium. I was a very strong supporter, very strong encourager, kind of led the way thinking I'd get my neck chopped off. And in retrospect, the only thing I did wrong was to not do all three stadiums at one time. We should have done football at the same time, as we did the Gophers and the baseball stadium.
David Fisher.
Yes. People are calling you Mr. Speaker. You have so many titles, it's hard to pick one. you had alluded earlier to the notion that you really do like the University of Minnesota, but you don't love the University of Minnesota because there are some issues that need to be addressed. Could you articulate a little bit more what you mean by that?
Sure. I think what I was meaning by that, Commissioner, what I was meaning by that is that if you love something, you probably don't want to be a change agent. You probably want to just find the way it is. You're not looking at any needed changes. My guess is that the university, and by the way, I'm dealing from a 30,000 foot level. I've not been on the board yet. I've only been an adjunct professor. I've only been the person to vote for the $600 million a year. So I don't know all the ins and outs, but I like the U as it is. I think the U is a wonderful institution for economic development in the state. We perform well, but can we just perform better, David? I think we can perform better. My guess is that to come here to the legislature and ask for more money, to go to individual alumni and ask for more money, you have to be willing to be more accountable in regards to performance. You have to be willing to change. So my word, like, love, was if you like something, you're still willing to change it, you're still willing to be a change agent, you're still willing to look at how to make it better, as opposed to the latter being it's just fine the way it is and we'll just let the status quo continue. I'm not a status quo person. I see myself as a change agent, have always seen myself as a change agent. Change is not always, you know, not just for change, hopefully doing it for the better, for a performance. That's a choice of two words. Maybe it's not well, maybe it wasn't well thought out, but
Lois Josephson.
On the economic development front, we just heard a candidate who was a former doctor at the university with lots of exclamation points behind doctor. So we talked a lot about the medical matters. Minnesota is a medical state. The last thing in the world we want is for that to become any less strong than it is, and it's threatened and challenged. Minnesota is an agricultural state. Minnesota is beginning a process with the biosciences and the nutraceuticals and the melding of those sorts of things. Please share with us your thoughts, your insights, what you might bring, background that you might have in that melding of agriculture and medicine. And then, if you would, talk a little bit about production and processing agriculture and how you might see that from an economic development perspective with the university and its land grant.
I'll try to remember two questions. First of all, as a farmer, I'll do the latter first.
Okay.
As a farmer, I know that there are significant things in this state that bring farmers agriculture together, and there are significant things that we disagree upon. But I think when you look at farmers, whether it be from the valley up in the northwest to the southwest to the southeast where I'm from, one thing that should be able to hold us together is research. Research to add value to our products, research to add value to our animal agriculture, research that the university is and can only do itself. And I think that is a very, very important part of our university land grant mission, is our School of Agriculture and the research that's done at the St. Paul campus. And again, I think it's one thing that brings us together as peoples in the agricultural community. Now, there's things we're going to disagree upon. You know, there's a couple other things that probably bring us together, like property taxes and a few things like that. But there's a few things that bring us together. You try to find those things that bring us together as opposed to things that we disagree upon. And by the way, that would be part of my philosophy of governing, too, is that you have to find common ground amongst people. You can't govern from here and here, from absolutely opposite positions. You have to look for and find common ground amongst people. Biomedical services, the agricultural aspect of it. As I mentioned earlier, Lois, I think that our university may be the most important economic development institution in the state. It may be as we prepare our engineers, as we prepare our researchers, as we prepare our doctors, as we prepare our architects, as we prepare our think tank people, the folks from the Humphrey Institutes that are involved in thought. That adds to, enhances our state's economy, needs to be encouraged, and I think there is a place for the university to be both the land grant institution, supporting the research that is necessary in production of agriculture, as well as the research institution that we have to be absolutely leading in the flagship of. And I think they're mutually inclusive, not mutually exclusive of each other.
Okay, Pat Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, you brought up several key words that balance, performance measurement, you know, and with your mathematics background, I think I'd like to compare which hybrid you're going to plant in your farm this year. Those are important attributes as well. So maybe at another time. I'd like to talk a little bit about the land grant mission of the University of Minnesota. And as we look out 5 to 10 years, what do you think the most significant challenge is to that mission and for the university continuing that mission, and how do we deal with those threats?
Pat, like you on your farm, we're not planning the same hybrids that we did 10 years ago. we have changed our allegiance because of performance. We've
change our allegiance. the land grant institution, maybe Pat, could you refer that last second question again?
The significant challenges as we look forward 5 to 10 years to that core mission of research, teaching, and outreach.
To me, here might be our most significant challenge as a peoples of this state. The University of Minnesota belongs to everyone, but it belongs to no one. That may be our biggest challenge in coming forward, whether it be with alumni or with the legislature, with the funding bodies, with research grants. And by that, I mean this. When we're at the legislature here in this room that you represent, we take our oath of office to the state of Minnesota, not to the district we represent. We certainly need to represent our peoples in our district. We need to represent our constituents in our district. My district in Goodhue or Winona, Wabasha counties, has a different flavor, a different feeling than some of the other parts of the state of Minnesota. Yet we take our oath of office to the state. And that is an important difference, that at some time we come together and we say, this is in the best interest of Minnesota. It may not be in my best interest as a farmer in Goodhue County at some point, but in the best interest of Minnesota, that's what we need to do. I believe the U, when you think of the numbers, folks, there shouldn't be a more positive, influential interest in the state of Minnesota than the university. There shouldn't be. 400,000 graduates, 4,000 faculty. We touch every farmer in the state, Pat. Every farmer is such. There shouldn't be a more influential group in the state, if we did it correctly and coordinated right, than the University of Minnesota. Yet I can't say that that's true. So if this university belongs to all of us, and somehow or another we have to develop that public trust, whether it's performance standards, for more dollars, whether it's with the legislators here, my colleagues, my friends, we have to develop that that strong feeling that the university is our university. That we have that special feeling. You know, when we have so many post-secondary institutions in the state, Mankato State College or State College Mankato, you know, there's 3 or 4 people that claim ownership to that down in the Mankato area. Down where your area is,
yep.
They like the U, but the U is a bigger elephant. And the same is true is true at St. Cloud, and the same is true at Wilmer, and the same is true at Jackson. They have an ownership there. We need to develop that ownership for public trust statewide. I think to develop that may be our biggest challenge.
Richard Newell.
My question kind of a little bit relates to Pat's, or where you got into, was the university's one member of the higher education organizations within the state. What opportunities are there for the university to work with the other organizations in this time of limited resources to make the whole system more efficient and the university more efficient, obviously, in its mission?
Richard, again, my answer probably will not be political. I don't think the university can be everything to everybody. I don't think we can be everything to everybody. I think we have to do what we do best and allow the rest of the higher education community to do what they do best. We do research great at the university. A few years ago, I was very supportive of President Brunix when he made the decision with the board to eliminate General College. It was just not a function that we should be doing at the University of Minnesota, folks. That's why we have the rest of the higher education community, whether it be Normandale or whether it be Metro State or just across here at St. Paul Tech College. I think that the relationship between the rest of the higher education community in Minnesota and the university needs to be strengthened. I'm not sure there is a relationship now. I'm not aware of it. and are at least greatly aware of it, and I think it should be strengthened, and I think it should be reached out to in such a way that we each do what we do best. And we, with the resources as they are right now, Mr. Newell, we can't be duplicating. We can't be doing the inefficiencies of a higher education community at the U that can also be done at Normandale 15 miles away or 10 miles away, whatever it is. There needs to be, and this would probably be a whole week-long retreat with the Minsky board and with the university board, a policy discussion to take place that allows each of us to efficiently do what we do best. And I'm not sure that coordination is there to the point where it should be right now. Now, right now, which are very honestly right now, when you come here, again, I'll refer to this, the question gets to be, did Minsky get a 3% and the university got a 3% decrease? Or, you know, that's how we measure right now. That's pretty archaic, folks. That's pretty archaic.
Okay, Jim Erickson.
Mr. Speaker, or perhaps Ole. this group, I'm honored to be on it. I'm a new member, but they work very hard, and I believe all 16 of the people we're interviewing these next 3 days are fully qualified to be on the Board of Regents. That said, then we have to figure out what the particular attributes the candidates bring to the situation. I think Paul articulated that you bring a knowledge of the legislature that could certainly help you. You're also a twofer in the sense that you're a farmer. I'm on record in this group as saying it's very important to have an agriculture person on the board. That's a traditional seat, and we'll be losing that agriculture person. That's why I trust one of the reasons you applied. I'd like your comments on that, the importance of there being an informally designated representative of the farmer agriculture community. Likewise, we've had a tradition of having a labor member on the board who is one of the candidates. And lastly, I'm sorry to say, but that we have only one woman that we're interviewing of the 16, equally qualified and certainly could be selected by the regents. I wonder about your view about that issue in terms of the demography that we have to balance with respect to the university.
To the latter part of your question first, Jim, Laura is a wonderful person that I do love. Not like. She is an extremely talented lady, and I wish her nothing but the best in going through your classes.
To be consistent with my understanding of life as well as my response to Jennifer early, I'm not a firm believer of quotas of any places. I'm not a firm believer of designated spots in places. I think that that undersells, undermines, and probably doesn't bring the best people forward for the future vision and decisions that, in this case, the U board or any other group might have. I've not been a strong supporter of designated spots. I think that reaching out is important. Diversity is important. You try to find a balance. That's important. Jim, I know consistently you try to find the best people to bring the best balance, to bring the best experience for the, in this case, the University of Regents board forward. And I do not want you to forward my recommendation only because I'm a farmer or because I'm involved in agriculture, as well as what I said, being speaker or involved in this institution. Or as well as the diversity I've lived in my life, reaching out to tutoring and recruiting people to run for office. Or as well as being involved in the U as an adjunct professor there. You bring it all together. You bring it all together in a balance. I would accept your recommendation. You do it just because I'm a farmer, and you and I would both be ill-served. By the way, I could sell Laura 40 acres of land and take care of the situation.
if she paid the right price. Everything's for sale for a price, right, Matt?
Richard is the last question.
Mr. Speaker, relating to agriculture, every year, urban sprawl, roads, and so forth take up 600,000 acres of prime farmland. Now, when you say prime farmland, there is no more. It's gone. I mean, you can't go in the mountains and make prime farmland. Has there been any thought to emphasize the importance not of just the economic loss of the land, but of the quality of food that we are so used to in America could be diminishing? And it seems that there's a lot of publicity on preserving the wetlands, but there is very little information or publicity or action on the preservation or the very serious problem of the sprawl of taking the prime farmland, not just let farmland, just prime farmland. And that's going on every year, 600,000 acres. Would there be any place that the U could take some position on that of sorts, or is that getting a stretch?
Richard, I wouldn't want to designate that. That might be beyond a Board of Regents decision. That might be a different level policy decision. But when you say quality, I doubt that there's been any studies or any research or any surveys done on the quality of food. On the quantity, yes. On the ability for us to produce and what we're producing and how much we're producing. Quantity-wise, yes. Quality-wise, I haven't seen any research studies that have been done. I am one who, I love the land. I am the land. That's what I am. In fact, if you look close here, if you look too close here, you'll see stuff underneath my fingernails that probably didn't get cleaned off the right way from yesterday. Having said that, the time for planning, as what we're going to do with the land, is how we live together as a peoples, as how we sprawl, is critical now. It was critical 20 years ago, Richard, as we started to lose all these lands to development. And development is, you know, we all need to progress. We all need to have ourselves a better way of living. My goal in life, I'm sure like yours, is that my children live better than I do. That's why I work. That's why I study. That's why I research. That's why I get involved in public policy. I want things better for my kids than I had. But part of that being better, I think, means preserving and keeping our land, agriculture production land, as ag land. And we do a very good job of that in Goodhue County through our ordinances. We have some pretty strict zoning ordinances down there. But it would be something that I would be in tune with, concerned about. I'm not sure that there has been any studies from a program standpoint done, the one on the standpoint of the quality of food versus quantity or land preservation.
Would you like to make a closing statement?
Thanks, Jane. Sure. I just thank you for the opportunity. I give you a commitment to our wonderful institution that was important from the standpoint of the entire state. I hope to bring you a balance that very few can. Whether that be an institutional balance, whether that be a diversity balance, whether that be an agricultural balance, whether that be a leadership balance, a management balance of the executive branch. I know there are other things that I could probably add to the balance. I doubt that anybody can else has that unique set of experiences that they bring together that hopefully I'd be able to use in betterment of our university and the state. I love public policy, Madam Chair. I love it. I love getting home to my farm. When I drive towards Rochester, Madam Sure. No, I don't go all the way. But halfway I turn off. It gets big smiles on my face. But on the other hand, it's also a wonderful feeling to get up in the morning and drive towards the cities or the university and know that you're going to make a difference in the lives of people in the future and of the state and of my children's opportunities. So just thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.